That's the Cincinnati Pops Orchestra under the direction of Eric Kunzel performing The Cuban Overture by George Gershwin here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Kevin Kelly. We're your connection to local performances. And that piece will open a concert tonight at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. The orchestra will be conducted by David Commande, who is the founding artistic director and conductor of the Heartland Festival Orchestra in Peoria, and a former conductor of the Peoria Symphony Orchestra, also formerly of the Greater Boston Youth Symphony Orchestra, and quite a number of other ensembles. He is conducting under the as a finalist to become the music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. This year, all but one of the conductors of the five concerts by the orchestra are, in fact, finalists for that position. And this is their audition. Everybody submitted applications and everybody submitted videotapes. And I presume at some point had phone interviews. And then four gentlemen, as it happens, they're all men, were chosen to conduct the four concerts this year. And David is the second one to appear. Farhad Hudiyev was the first in the fall, and David will have his time in the spotlight and on stage tonight, and he's my guest in this portion of Live and Local. Coming up, I'll be talking with and we will be hearing the young vocalist Caitlin Caruso-Dobbs, who was born in Champaign-Urbana, and also one of her mentors, Rick Murphy, will be playing piano for her. They're going to be participating in a concert that is dubbed Caitlin Caruso-Dobbs and Friends. That'll be tomorrow afternoon. So more on that coming up. But David Commande, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in.
It's great to be with you.
And congrats on getting this far in the process.
Thank you.
This is not an unfamiliar process to you, I think. You've had a lot of different gigs, and every one of them, I imagine, had some sort of audition process, which can be pretty long for conductors.
It can be a long process, and between the announcement of a position and then expressing one's interest in it and then various stages along the way, it does take a good while. Initially you indicate to an orchestra that it's of interest to you, and then and you send some materials and they sort through that, and every position typically has upwards of 150 or 200 applicants, as you can imagine. And that gets sorted through to some smaller number. And then at some point, someone says, well, we'd like to see some of your work. And you send some video works along, possibly some recordings as well. And then some smaller number are invited to have a phone interview, usually with a committee, typically over the phone. So the candidate is on the one end of the line, and 11 or 12 or however many people are on the other end of the line. And you have that conversation, and then if you're very fortunate and the stars align correctly, then you're invited to come and spend, as I am doing this week, about a week, certainly a concert cycle.
And I imagine you have one-on-one interviews with board members and so on, and
yes,
other people, the search committee.
Well, there are many constituents who need to understand, get to know a candidate, understand his way of thinking, his way of communicating, and also, you know, part of it's how do you come across. So this week, for example, I very much enjoyed, I gave a luncheon lecture in the OLLI program.
Osher Lifelong Learning Institute.
Exactly. And so I spent about an hour and a half with those good folks talking about not just my experiences as a conductor, but also what conducting is. We had a lot of fun, actually.
Which is a really good question. It's hard to answer.
My comment to them, among others, was that I consider conducting to be one of the, in a way, ironically, most secret of professions, because even though it's fully in public, it's so thoroughly misunderstood on so many levels, and what the actual task is and how it's accomplished well or not well. So
I remember reading an interview with Carlo Maria Giulini, one of the greats, many years ago, and I remember at the time being sort of cynical about his comments. He kept saying, this is so mysterious, the art of conducting, what's mysterious about it? Well, once I got more into conducting myself, I thought, and and observing other conductors and observing ensembles' interactions to conductors, I thought there are a lot of things that really are mysterious that can't be explained in any practical way. I mean, you could have one conductor who has impeccable technique, but the orchestra can't play together with this conductor, and you have another conductor whose technique is an absolute mess, but the orchestra sounds fabulous.
Yeah.
How does one explain that, for example?
Well, there are great mysteries, but at the same time, it is possible to at least analyze and understand when it isn't working. You know, when I've played for really, as a cellist, when I've played for really, really great conductors, then there is an element that comes in that is, even to the player, mysterious. So I remember playing for Leonard Bernstein at Tanglewood. I was playing principal cello. We were doing the Brahms Second Symphony, and that slow movement has this gorgeous cello solo and for the section. And the magic of the way the man conducted, and it wasn't just his name. It was like music came out of his pores. It's very hard to describe. But those are the extras. Those are the indescribables beyond the describable. Because there are things about the physical technique. There are things about the styles of communication which are susceptible to understanding, which somebody watching thoughtfully can figure many of those things out. It's just at the very top, then certainly mystery sets in.
Although I remember being at a conducting workshop once where most of us were, you know, probably pretty mediocre conductors when it comes right down to it. And I may even have told this story before on the show. And at the time, at the end of the week, you'd have a relay. You know, everybody would conduct the different excerpts during the week. At the end, you'd have, say, Mahler's First Symphony and a relay of conductors, and one person finishes his or her segment and the next person steps up, and the sound would change immediately, almost before the conductor actually done anything.
Yes.
So you have one person who's not a particularly remarkable conductor and another person who's not a particularly remarkable conductor, and yet, say, the one guy is really huge, and I'm thinking of somebody in particular, and the sound suddenly got enormous just because this big guy stepped on the podium.
Well, and the one problem is that actually often the lay public think that it's impossible to see or observe any of that. But the fact is that a lot of what a conductor does is body language in the most classical sense. So you can, an orchestra, of course, we understand, judges a conductor as he walks to the podium. I mean, they know a lot about a conductor as he or she walks to the podium, or how he or she stands there. The audience and observant audience can notice a lot just from the body language of the conductor and of the orchestra relative to the conductor.
Even seeing the conductor from behind.
Even then?
Because you have, you know, the opposite perspective.
Yes.
Of course. Yeah. And of course, you're here to actually conduct this concert with the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra, which is tonight at 7:30. So we might as well talk a bit about the music. We opened with the on the program today with the Cuban Overture of Gershwin. You will open the concert with that same piece and pair it in the first half with another piece that is, in a way, at the beginning, not unlike the Cuban Overture. I assume because of some what could be perceived as either jazz influence or Latin influence, or just plain jazzy rhythm influence. Or how did you decide to pair these pieces?
Well, the jazz connection and also the personal connection between Ravel and Gershwin is intriguing, I think. I mean, they're contemporaries, and the works appeared into the world at very close proximity in the 1930s. And Gershwin, I love some of the stories around Gershwin's visit to Ravel. Gershwin was very serious. Of course, he started out as a song plugger, plugging songs on the piano, playing them for people who might come and then hear the song and buy the sheet music. That was how he got a start before his composing took off. But then later on in life, already very successful in making a lot of money, he went to Paris and he sought out the greatest composers, and some of them he asked to study with. He talked to Stravinsky, he talked to Schoenberg, but he went to Ravel. And Ravel said, "Well, Monsieur Gershwin, can you tell me what you make in a year?" And he says, "Well, I don't know. I think it's about 50,000. which in that day was an immense fortune. And the story goes that, and Ravel told the story, well, perhaps I should take lessons from you.
That's right.
So they encountered one another. But the jazz, even though, you see, the Cuban Overture was Gershwin on musical travels and literal travels. He had gone down to Cuba and he heard the sounds and he literally brought home instruments from Cuba. Because he loved the sound of the music of Cuba. So he brought home what he called Cuba sticks. We call them claves. He brought home bongos. He brought home other instruments. And they figure prominently in this work, which, as you heard in this introduction, has a very swinging quality but isn't really near to what we call American classical jazz. Whereas Ravel was fascinated by jazz and felt its influence, as many European composers were, and he felt that the rhythm and the harmonies of jazz were incredibly powerful, and they found their way into this work, which strongly influenced. So Ravel, of course, transformed them in his own very special way, and there are other qualities to this concerto which go way beyond jazz. But nonetheless, that was a natural. Since my theme is musical travels, Gershwin was traveling musically to Cuba. Ravel, French, Spanish, Basque background, was traveling musically into jazz in this work.
And you will be joined by pianist Adam Neiman, who I know you've worked with before as a cellist.
Yes.
And on tonight's concert. More about your collaboration with Adam Neiman, because there's another performance that we can mention this weekend coming up. My guest is David Commande, who is a finalist to be the music director and conductor of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. He will be conducting the orchestra tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center in Urbana. Here's the opening to the Piano Concerto in G, as it's known, by Maurice Ravel. And I'm playing the opening because it seemed almost to have direct musical parallel in a way to the opening of Gershwin's Cuban Overture. That is a portion of the first movement of the Concerto in G Major for Piano and Orchestra by Maurice Ravel. The pianist is Marta Argerich, and the orchestra, the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Claudio Abbado. That entire piece will be played tonight at 7:30 on a concert by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra with pianist Adam Neiman and conductor David Commande. Mr. Commande, my guest, here on this portion of Live and Local on FM 90.9. He's a candidate to become the next music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. So the Cuban Overture of Gershwin and the Ravel Piano Concerto constitute the first half of tonight's concert. And I said right before we played that you have done some performing as a cellist with Adam Neiman. I thought as an aside we'd mention a performance that you're doing with him and also with University of Illinois faculty violinist Stefan Milenkovic tomorrow.
That's right.
Because you're doing a wonderful chamber program. Why don't you just tell folks about that real quickly?
Well, we will be playing the Brahms B Major Piano Trio in recital at Eureka College in the chapel at Eureka College tomorrow evening, the 19th, Saturday at 7:30 p.m. And the concert benefits arts program at Eureka College. And Adam and I, a year ago or so, actually August of 2011, we did our first chamber music collaboration in the very same space, a beautiful space built in 1855. It's fantastic for music. We played a Brahms second cello sonata, and Adam played several of the transcendental etudes of Franz Liszt. Last year in 2011, he was making a grand tour playing the works of Liszt in the centennial of Franz Liszt, and he's an amazing virtuoso, but also at the same time amazingly sensitive musician. When I first met Adam. It was in a house concert at which he performed all 12 of the Transcendental Etudes by memory without flaw. It was mind-boggling.
That's a huge program.
You're not kidding. Yeah, all of it. It was stunningly magnificent. So that led to my inviting him as a soloist all in one of in the second Liszt piano concerto with the Heartland Festival Orchestra. But we also had the fun of making music together, literally chamber music, as we will do tomorrow night. And Stefan, who visited the Heartland Festival Orchestra last season as a soloist in a Mozart violin concerto, everyone here must know what a wonderful artist he is. So for me, it's a huge musical treat to play this gorgeous Brahms piano trio, this early one, Opus 8. Such melodies.
And that'll be tomorrow night at 7:30 at Eureka College in the Chapel in Eureka, Illinois. Also on that program, Stefan and Adam playing the Ravel violin sonata, and Adam doing some of the, you said, a portion of the Hammerklavier sonata of Beethoven, and then you'll be doing with Adam the first cello sonata of Brahms.
So. Right.
Nice program.
It's gorgeous music.
That'll be a lot of fun. So there are conductors who are also performers in other ways, and David happens to be one of them. The second half of tonight's concert by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra is quite different from the first half. It's all Italian.
Yes.
And it begins with a piece that we're not going to hear anything of because I think it's familiar to a great many people, the Overture to the Barber of Seville of Gioachino Rossini. And then you play this major crowd pleaser. Well, I think it's a major crowd pleaser anyway. At least it's a blockbuster piece.
Yes.
The Pines of Rome of Ottorino Respighi, which is, I don't remember, was it the first, second, or third of his Roman trilogy?
I'm pretty sure it's the second.
The second. And then so there's the Fountains of Rome.
Fountains and festivals of Rome, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what made you decide to pair these two pieces, aside from the fact that they're Italian composers?
Well, in this case, musical travels within Rome and within Italy. I mean, there's also a little bit of time travel, since there's almost exactly a century of time between Rossini's work and Respighi's work. Respighi then does this traveling within Rome, the design of the four movements of the Pines of Rome. It's centered on these natural themes, but opens with pines next to a playground in Rome. And I like to think of the four movements of this work in terms of light. The first one's extremely bright. You can imagine in color, of course, in musical color, but I imagine the light and these kids playing their games and the shrill cries, and it couldn't be more energetic. But then the fascinating thing is the instant transformation to the second movement, which is pines near the catacombs. And you imagine this descent into the darkness, this somber darkness of the catacombs, almost the reverse of the complete reverse of the youth of the children playing. And then the implication is that we're visiting the shades of departed souls in the catacombs, and you hear this plain song, almost this, you're hearing this pilgrimage of the souls as they pass through, or as we visit these catacombs.
One hopes that it is not the souls of kids who had mishaps on the playground.
No. So we pass from the bright into the dark, and then magically, the pines by the Janiculum. This is nocturnal, and either twilight or into the evening, and you hear the night sounds, this incredible repose and tranquility, in which the nature, the beauty of the night nature is evoked. And most interestingly, historically, this is the first such classical work where the composer actually insisted that a recording be used in the performance, and that recording is the recorded sound of a nightingale, which comes at a very magical moment in this third of the four movements. And then there's a gradual transformation into the light of dawn, the pines by the Appian Way, and you hear an imaginary procession of the great armies, the great past armies, imperial armies, who are marching back in triumph from their travels. And the last movement is one of the most glorious crescendos, I think, in music history.
Oh, it just builds and builds and builds. And aren't there like various brass choirs that typically will be placed in different parts of the hall? And
yes,
so on?
That's right. That's right.
And I assume this will happen tonight.
But of course. Yes.
How could it not? That was the wrong accent, I think, for an Italian.
Yes, you're right. Naturalmente, yeah.
Well, let's do a little... a little sampling really quickly of the four moods, maybe. The play, this is sort of musically not the great way to go, but it'll give people a sample of what you just described. So we'll just do bits of the beginning of each of the four movements. So this is the one that the Pines of the Villa Borghese, which is the one you described as...
The children.
Like the children at play. From the Pines of Rome of Respighi, in this recording we'll hear the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by Riccardo Muti. Well, we sort of cut out right at the grand theme that eventually transforms into this massive full orchestra plus multiple brass choir sound at the end of The Pines of Rome, which we just took a tour of to fit the theme of musical travels on the program by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra tonight at 7:30 at the Kranert Center for the Performing Arts in Urbana. It'll be conducted by David Commande, who is a finalist to be the music director of the Champaign-Urbana Symphony. The first candidate conducted the orchestra in the fall, and then there are two more to come after this concert. David has been my guest this portion of Live and Local, and he'll be joined by pianist Adam Neiman on that concert as well. David, thanks very much for being on the show today. It's great to see you again.
Great to see you in studio.
Yeah, in a different sort of context.
Yes.
And best of luck with everything.
Thank you, and to you.
Coming up, we have some live music in our studio, sung by Caitlin Caruso Dobbs. We'll hear more about her in a very few minutes. We have support for our show today from The Music Shop, celebrating 51 years of service to music education. The Music Shop serves over 200 school music programs with band and orchestra instruments, a large sheet music department, thousands of accessories, and private lessons at 27 East Market View Drive in Market View Plaza, Champaign, or at themusicshop.com. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Fast asleep, you lie awake and think about the boy, and never, never think of counting sheep. When your lonely heart has learned its lesson, you'd be his. If only he would call.
Caitlin Caruso Dobbs, live in our studio with her mother, Deborah Myers Dobbs, at the piano. And she will be, I guess, actually, who's going to be playing for you tomorrow?
Rick Murphy.
Rick Murphy, okay, that's what I thought. So Mom is sort of filling in for Rick, who must be still involved with auditions or something over at University High School.
Yep.
Caitlin's going to be giving a program tomorrow that there's being billed as Caitlin Caruso Dobbs and Friends, I think.
Yep.
And you know what, Caitlin? I came in here without the appropriate information. I left
a
piece
of
paper on my desk.
We have it.
Maybe I can... yeah, thank you. Daddy Jim is giving me... Here it is. And Friends in Concert, accompanied by the amazing Rick Murphy. Sorry,
exactly.
I didn't mention that.
I thought that was appropriate.
Featuring Champaign-Urbana Youth Glee Club and other students of Deborah Myers Dobbs. Tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock. At the Soto Theater, a place that probably most people don't know about. Soto Theater's on South Neal Street in Champaign, in downtown, south downtown. That's what Soto means. And it's where the music shop used to be, for those who are familiar with downtown. That's the space, and you can get into it either from Neal Street or from... although maybe only the Neal Street side is open.
I only know about the Neal Street.
No, you can get in.
You can get in from Walnut Street as well.
Okay.
Depends if they'll have both doors open. But in any event, thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
I just saw this notice somewhere earlier this week, and I thought, wait a second, aren't you at college?
Yes.
Are you on one of those systems that you get to be here all the way through June or January?
No. NYU has a January term that's 3 weeks long or so between fall semester and spring semester. And typically music students, like, none of our classes are really offered during that time. And so I didn't have any reason to be at school until January 28th is when spring semester starts. So.
Oh, very nice.
I
had the same deal when I was... I really should not say this, but I went to Northwestern, which I shouldn't say given the debacle that happened yesterday at the Assembly Hall, which I happen to have attended. You know, I haven't gone to any basketball games before, and Northwestern just sort of beat up on them. But in any event, that wasn't expected. But the reason I mentioned that is we were on the quarter system, so I was off all of January, which was kind of nice, but it was terrible then to be in school all of June. Everybody else. Do you that also?
Our final day of class is May 13th, and then we have a week or so of finals. So I'll be done towards the end of May.
And so you are a voice major.
Yes.
Vocal performance major at New York University.
Yeah.
But you must be also doing some things in theater. That was your plan,
the unique thing about our program is that the vocal performance program, you enter with a concentration in either classical voice or music theater. And so we're all getting classically trained, you know, and are encouraged and required to learn art songs and classical repertoire. But then if we've chosen this concentration in music theater, we also focus on the music theater aspect of voice. Like, mostly your first couple years, we do mostly Rodgers and Hammerstein and that sort of, classic Broadway that's more... in tune with classical style singing, you know. They don't really work on contemporary stuff until we're a little older. So.
And your goal is to wind up on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. That would be cool.
Without
Oh, yeah.
There's no question of what you want to do.
No. Well, no.
I mean, I met you, I think it was the first time I met you, almost 7 years ago, mm-hmm. 6.5 years ago,
yep.
When you were playing the role of Eponine in Les Misérables, the student edition at the Champagne with the Champagne Urbana Theater Company at Virginia Theater. And I was the music director, and you were this unbelievably young and talented person in this role that anytime anybody said, oh, I mean, you were among the performers that people would say after the show, you know, the girl playing Eponine was fabulous, and then
inevitably
somebody would say, well, you know, she's only 12 or 13 or whatever you were at the time, and then the jaw would drop.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it was, and you were a pretty well-developed actor at that point as
Thank
well.
Thank you. Thank you. I know. It's funny to think about stuff I did when I was younger. And I think that you didn't think so much, you know, now that I'm a little older and I have more experience and more, I don't know, opinions running around in my head and things of myself and that other people have given me. When you act, when you try to act, you know, it's less organic, I think. When I was younger, you know, you had a lot less things to think about, you know, and so you just kind of did it. And so people wonder sometimes because I did that. And then I also did Mary a few years before that in The Secret Garden with CUTC. And I was pretty young. And people always, you know, wonder, ask, you know, oh, how did you, you know, you were so good, you're acting or something. I'm just like, I don't know. I was just a kid doing what I like to do.
I did. You did something naturally and otherwise did what you were told. I
guess. I hope I did what I was told.
The right combination of those two things.
I hope that.
Now I have to think now. Did you actually do what I told you to do?
Yeah, I was going to say. You'd be the guy to say.
Well,
no, I was ultimately pleased. So either you did or I didn't need to tell you much and I can't remember anymore. But I was surprised to see when I went to your Facebook page to get a little more information about you than I may have known.
Okay.
I was surprised that you list yourself as a soprano.
Yeah.
Because you have such a low speaking voice, and I seem to remember you as an alto type.
Yeah, a lot of people, I don't know, I guess, I mean, and in choir settings, I usually choose to sing alto because I like singing the harmony, and I feel when I sing soprano, it's kind of loud, and it's harder for me to blend, and I don't like that. You know, I prefer to sing alto, but I do work on soprano repertoire, like when I'm working on classical pieces, and I'm capable, and I guess I can't really classify myself yet, you know, and they keep telling us that at school, that we're really too young to be classified as sopranos or mezzos, but I'm working on soprano rep, and especially at school with this, she's really focusing on the higher part of my voice, and I'm really encouraged to sing in head voice more than I do typically, and so it really is developing a lot more in the past few months than it has before, I guess.
And we heard some example of that in the song you opened with.
Oh, yeah.
Which was from what? From what show? Is it from a show?
Oh, it's just a Frank Sinatra tune.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a tune that Frank Sinatra did.
He sang. I'm not sure. I know it's really bad. I should know
Mom is looking it up, right?
Sorry.
Well, it's one of those standards that nobody remembers who wrote it.
I should know.
The writers are Hilliard and Mann.
This is why nobody knows.
That's it.
I don't know.
Right. I'm talking with Caitlin Caruso-Dobbs, and we're going to hear again here in just a second who's going to be singing along with some other folks who are in Deborah Myers-Dobbs' studio and then also with the Champaign-Urbana Youth Glee Club, which I have to tell you, I never heard of the group before reading about this, so I want to talk to you about that coming up.
Okay.
But I want to first hear you do something else.
Sweet.
And that'll be tomorrow afternoon at 2 o'clock at Sodo Theater in downtown Champaign, south downtown Champaign. What do we got?
If I were a bell.
Ask me, how do I feel? Ask me now that we're cozy and clinging. Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a bell, I'd be ringing. Yes, I knew my morale would crack from the wonderful way that you looked. Boy, if I were a duck, I'd quack. And if I were a goose, I'd be cooked. Ask me, how do I feel, little me, with my quiet upbringing? Well, sir, all I can say is if I were a gate, I'd be swinging. Ask me how to describe this whole beautiful thing. Well, if I were a
from Guys and Dolls, right?
Yep.
Who's the character that sings that?
Sarah Brown.
Sarah Brown. She's the Salvation Army person.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin played that role once.
Yeah.
Who did?
Caitlin
has played that for the Park District.
That's the voice, by the way, of Jim Dobbs, who is father to Caitlin. And Deborah Myers Dobbs is at the piano, who is mother to Caitlin.
It's a family affair.
Family affair, yeah. Are either of you going to be doing anything on tomorrow's program?
No,
other
we're just behind
supporting?
The scenes tomorrow.
They will get to relax.
We're going
to.
Does that happen when Caitlin is on stage? Are
no,
you
not
able
really.
To relax?
No, I stand in back and pace mostly.
How did you feel letting go of her, Deborah, as a singer? Because you were her teacher, all the way through high school? Or did mm-hmm. you let her go before that?
Well, she had had a couple lessons with a friend of mine, mm-hmm. Kay Welch. And Kay was wonderful and worked with Caitlin in the soprano repertoire. But it was the hardest thing I've ever done to let her go, frankly. So, it was a very tough fall. It was quiet around the house. But
although you have others around the house.
Well, we have three others at the house, yes. So,
but Caitlin's the loudest.
I guess. I don't know.
Vocally letting her go, I felt like it's time. It's time for her to get some other opinions and some other ideas from other people. And she has such a wide variety of repertoire that she's been exposed to already. That I felt like if she gets to work with other people, she may find that she's capable of doing things that she didn't really realize.
So I imagine you'll probably need to resist now and then when she comes back, and you might perceive that somebody undid something you spent years to get her to do.
Well, so far that hasn't happened.
Yeah, it's been
she's
really
only been
strange.
There a few months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We do have conversations now and then on the phone or actually Skype.
Skype.
Thank God for Skype.
We love Skype.
Then we can actually see her face, which is the hardest part, it's to not see her. And so we do have conversations about what's going on in your lessons and what are they asking and what, you know, what's being recommended as repertoire. And you know, it's hard for her to adjust to someone who doesn't know her and doesn't know her experience and doesn't know the repertoire that she's used to, because she has really done a lot of things that most people wouldn't by the time she's, you know, at the age of 19, so...
But I imagine that that's probably true of a lot of her colleagues at NYU.
Yeah, a lot of us have similar frustrations, I guess.
Because in order to get there into a program as well-known and well-thought of as that, you've got to be pretty darn good and experienced.
Okay, it's a very small program, too, and it's in the Steinhardt School of Music. Rather than through, what's
the Tisch School of the Arts.
The Tisch School is the theater program, and... the thing is, it's a very small program, 20-some-odd people are admitted
here.
Yeah,
we have 26 freshmen and one transfer this year. So.
And Caitlin was given a very large scholarship, and that's what made it possible. They gave her a talent scholarship. And so, really, we just kind of had to let go. What better place for her to be with what she wants to do for her life than in New York City, studying with people who are working... She has classmates who are working on Broadway, so it's a great program.
Yeah, that ought to be rubbing shoulders. Hopefully things will rub off.
Yeah, it's really one of the first... We have every week a program meeting, which I'm learning in college is a usual thing, I guess. And it's kind of where we all come together in the Black Box Theater, and sometimes they have a presentation for us or a master class, or sometimes it's just to talk about what's coming up or something with everybody, not just freshmen, like all the vocal performance people. And one of the first weeks we were there, they had all these alumni come and speak to us about their careers, basically. And it was so interesting and enlightening. And all of them have worked on Broadway or are still working. And they were all so kind and, like, answered all our questions and gave us all this great advice, you know, things to do, like, things they were glad they did in college, things they wished they had done, you know. And it was just, it was simultaneously so interesting and frightening, you know. So it was.
Well, I would hope that people like that would be helpful because, of course, they had to go through everything that you're going to have to go through trying to get where they got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you would think there'd be no threat since they're already there.
Right.
Yeah. Although, well, anyway. You're listening to Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. Our broadcast is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled America's Musical Past, Shenanigans, Hootenannies, and Other Twisted Adventures. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. What would you like to do next?
At last.
And is this from a show or is this just a song?
This is a Harry Warren tune.
Actually, by Harry Warren.
By Harry Warren, yes.
Made famous by?
Etta James and Ella Fitzgerald. And
a bunch of people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Many people.
Presumably I'll recognize it.
I hope so.
It's one of those I don't necessarily know the name, but I'll know the music.
Yeah, you'll recognize it.
Caitlin Caruso Dobbs and Deborah Myers Dobbs here on Live and Local, live in the studio.
I was never spellbound by a starry sky. What's the good of moon glow when love has passed you by? Then there came a midnight and the world was new. By stars, but just by you. At last, my love has come along. My lonely days are over.
I did know that song.
I figured you did.
Well, I would not have known the words because it's not, for some reason, it doesn't come up for a while.
Yeah.
There's that, what do you call the beginning of a song that people often skip?
Well, it's just, it's longer than an intro, I guess.
The
it's
verse, Dan always called
Tin
it.
Tin Pan Alley.
The verse.
We call them Tin Pan Alley intros.
Oh, really?
The people I've worked with.
Well, there's the
you
bridge,
the
but that's something
that
else.
Style. Just
the opening.
Opening, yes, the verse.
In opera, you would call it the recitative, but not here.
Yeah, that's different. Well, in any event, it was sung by Caitlin Caruso Dobbs and played at the keyboard by Deborah Myers Dobbs. Caitlin will be accompanied by Rick Murphy, tomorrow at 2 o'clock on a concert that also includes performances and some chorus numbers, I guess. Did you say ensemble numbers?
Yeah.
With others, with students of Deborah's. And then the Champaign Urbana Youth Glee Club. Tell me about that. You started this group.
I did. I started working for the Champaign Park District in the fall of 2010 with my mom. We did the Music Man Junior with their youth theater program. And I discovered I like teaching a lot, too. and before, I knew I liked performing, and I don't know, I've sometimes come across people who seem to choose music out or seem to choose teaching. I've come across great teachers and other people who seemed almost, like, resentful or something because they really wanted to perform, but they, like, didn't for some reason or whatever. And I didn't want to be one of those people. So I thought, teaching's not for me. But then I discovered that it actually is. I really love teaching. I love... there's a whole different kind of fulfillment you get from teaching something to someone else and watching them succeed, especially children. I fell in love with these kids. And so that summer, I guess it was 2011 by that time, I had kind of been mulling around in my head with the popularity of this Glee TV show and all this kind of thing. And I remember being that age, and I fortunately was in CICC choir and other venues that allowed me to get to sing, but I feel like a lot of these kids, they need something more than just what the schools have to offer. And so I emailed their parents and I said, you know, I have this idea. I'd really like to get together with them and just teach them some songs and maybe have choreography and we'll have themes. And, you know, I'd just like to have a chance to work with them for a few weeks and have a recital and see how it goes. And several people were up for it. And so our first recital was Broadway themed, of course, and we got together every Saturday morning for a couple hours at my house for 8 weeks, and then we had a recital, and it featured, I've always had between 12 to 20 kids. One session we had over 20, but I've done that I did 4 sessions, and then they sang at my senior recital this summer, and now they're singing with me again.
Tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Yep.
Well, I really appreciate your coming in. You sound beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Things seem to be happening already.
Thanks.
Between your work with your mom before and your work with your new teachers now at NYU. And I hope it's a wonderful recital. Tickets are available only at the door, and they cannot accept credit cards, it says here on the announcement. Doors open at 1 o'clock. Show starts at 2 o'clock at the Soto Theater in downtown Champaign tomorrow. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Here are a few other items you can go see and hear live in the next couple of days. I'm going to be really cherry-picking here because I don't have a lot of time. Central High School Jazz Bands are performing tonight at the Iron Post in Urbana this evening at 6 o'clock. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana is presenting the musical Bloody Bloody Andrew Jackson. That is at 8 o'clock tonight through Sunday and then continues for a while. Ryan Idaeus and the Feudin' Hillbillies, hoping I'm said their name right, at the Clinton Eagles Lodge in Clinton, 8:30 tonight. Springfield Theater Center presenting Couplings at the Hoagland Center for the Arts in Springfield tonight, and that goes through Sunday. And looking ahead to Monday, the East Central Illinois Youth Orchestra performing a concert at Smith Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. That is at 7:30 on Monday. Our program today is made possible by the Champaign-Urbana Symphony Orchestra. Details were all heard in the first half of this show. Tickets may be purchased online at cranertcenter.com. You're listening to 90.9 WYLL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. WYLL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. I'm Kevin Kelly.